So there was some girl in my class, middle school is junior high, so about like 11 or 12 years old. And I was going to call her up to talk to her. And I remember before that phone call, I was planning my phone call. My heart's beating. I'm so nervous, hands sweaty. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to start with this. I'm going to say this. I thought of all these interesting, funny, engaging things to say. And then finally, you do it. I don't even remember like what was the result. I think it was okay. But I just remember it was like I was just putting on an act. And it was so stressful the whole time. Yes, that's what we did. We used to call people if you like them, right? And then even not so long ago, well, actually, it's pretty long ago. It's like 15 years ago when I was pursuing my wife. When we were dating, we would talk on the phone all the time. We didn't SMS each other or message each other because at that time, each message costed a dollar. Not worth it. And so we would just call. We had plenty of minutes. And so we would talk for like really long time, I don't know, an hour. And of course, at the end, you say goodbye, right? And you say, and then of course you go, oh, you hang up. It's true. And then the other person says, no, you hang up. You hang up. And then finally you go, all right, on the count of three, you know what's coming. Let's hang up together. One, two, three. And then, hello? Right? And then the other person's like, I thought you were going to hang up. And so this goes on for a while. And then I finally, one, two, three, click. And then one person really does hang up. And the other person is kind of upset that the other person, I can't believe they hung up. So that was my dating experience, part of the dating experience. Now, it's changed, right? I think now, from what I heard, calling on someone on the phone is, whether it be romantic interest or not, even friendships, it's very inappropriate. Right? If you text someone and you're texting and then they suddenly call, your feeling is like, oh, why are they calling me? I am not prepared for this type of interaction. It must be something really serious. Times have changed, right? Now there's, there was a period there was online dating, right, where you would register to websites. Now, I don't even think you register. Now you just use apps, right? There's Coffee Meets Bagel, Tinder. Now you just swipe. And now you just, how you engage, like, you know, I shared about, like, calling somebody and just trying to make something happen. Now you text somebody. And so there's this term. My wife had no idea what it meant. And the term is you slide into someone's DMs. Everyone looks so confused. All that means is, DM is direct message, just to be clear. So all that means is, like someone you don't really know, and you just text message them directly for the purpose of, you know, romantic interest. And so things have changed. In fact, I'm a little FOMO, right? Because I was like, man, this sounds so fun. Like swiping and I don't know. And like I never got to experience that. I had to like do this phone thing. But times have changed. But even though times have changed, some things haven't, which is our desire for connection, for relationship. That has stayed the same. And when we're talking about dating, there's oftentimes different outcomes, right? Different results. It can be wonderful. It can lead you to have coffee with somebody. It allows you to connect and get to know someone, enjoy yourself with somebody, and maybe it can even lead to marriage. But the other result is it can also be not so good. It can be painful. It can be traumatizing. It can be filled with heartbreak and disappointment. And so, as we look to the Bible, like what does the Bible say about dating? Nothing, really. It wasn't a concept that existed. In fact, dating, I'm not sure if you knew it, it didn't start until very recently, until about the late 1800s. That's like a little bit over 100. It's a bit more, it's like no more than 150 years max. So it's a very recent, modern, Western concept that we've engaged in, and it really has become the norm. Like, can you imagine somebody not dating and getting married? You think it's crazy. But yet that has become the norm. But fortunately, even though dating isn't explicitly in the Bible, there's enough in it to give us guidance. There's enough in the Bible that talks about romantic and sexual relationships for the purpose of marriage that can help guide us. And so today I want to share, I have 3 points to really help guide us, okay? And so, the first point, point number one, guidance. When you're dating, setting physical boundaries. My first 2 points are basically points that your leaders really don't want to talk to you about, but I'm going to talk to you about today. So number one, so have a great house church this week, but setting physical boundaries. One of the things that non-Christians, if you were to ask them, like, oh, what do you know about Christianity? What's one of the things that they probably will mention are aware about? They'll say, oh yeah, isn't there this rule, no sex before marriage? Right? That's kind of the, and in this day and age, it's a crazy concept. I'm like, what? How can you live like that? Right? Because it's become so normal. However, I want to tell you the idea, it is firmly rooted in Scripture. Now, as I kind of deep dived into this, it wasn't so simple. There isn't actually a Scripture that explicitly says, explicit, like, you shall not have premarital sex. And oftentimes, the spirit we have is, if it's not explicit, then maybe we're allowed. But, you know, there's a lot of things in the Bible that isn't explicit, especially in this day and age. Right? Online dating, apps, internet, it's not in there. And so, we kind of have to capture the spirit of it. And I believe in the spirit, if you take not just one passage, but many passages, you'll come to the conclusion, yeah, like you are supposed to stay pure, to be holy, to be set apart. So let's turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 3. And it says, for this is the will of God, your sanctification. In other words, to be holy. That is that you abstain from sexual immorality. Sexual morality. And so how we would understand it is there's many things that are sexual moral, but one of those things would be sex outside of the confines of marriage. And that's called fornication. And so the Bible does mention that. Now, you might then say, well, it's not, maybe they're talking about other things, right? Maybe. But throughout Deuteronomy and even in the New Testament, it keeps talking about how important it is for a wife, for a woman, to be a virgin. So what's with that, if it's okay? And, you know, in order, and you might think, okay, that's the call for the woman. Not the men, right? Maybe, because that's how we think, right? Oh, how far can I go? But in order for the women to stay as a virgin, you can't, as a man, be with them. And thus, the result is the men also are to stay pure. Does that make sense? So you have to kind of connect some of these dots. And now you can take things even further. And I think at this point it's reaching. It's like, well, maybe then you just have to have premarital relationships with someone who's not a Christian. At that point, it's not making any sense. Okay, right? And we see this also with what Paul says. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, 8 to 9, he says, "But I say to the unmarried and the widows that it is good for them if they remain even as I," which is to stay single, to stay celibate, to not give in to your flesh. And then he says, "But if they do not have self-control, then let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion." Because, in other words, have sex in the confines of marriage. And so I think, I mean, there's much more, but I don't want to stay on this point for too long. But the message is clear. Sex outside of marriage is a sin. So what? Right? Maybe you've already come to accept that. You're like, yeah, it's a sin. So what? What is the big deal? What's the big deal? You might wonder why this matters so much. And I have two reasons for you. The reason involves both spiritual and relational consequences. First, there is the concept of something called a soul tie. A soul tie happens when you become basically connected to somebody. And when you engage in sex, it is the most intimate act you can experience. It's an act of mind, body, and soul, and you come together. And it's reserved for marriage because, you know, it says a husband and wife, this is in Genesis, they become one. And so you're soul tied together. And the illustration, I mean, my wife shared this with me last night. She said, "Oh, I heard this example about soul tie. It's like when you have sex, it's like having, you take salt, a salt shaker, already pre-ground salt. And then you would take something like sugar and you put it together and you shake it all about and then trying to separate that salt and sugar granules. It's next to impossible. It's all mixed up. And that's exactly what happens when you become one, right? You're all connected, and to separate it, you would say it's impossible. And you know, if this has happened to you, and okay, let me just say, it's not hopeless, of course. Of course, God can bring healing and restoration, and through inner healing as well, you can cut off those soul ties. Okay, so there is hope if you're willing to go to God. But if you've ever engaged in this, you know afterwards, especially if you've connected in this way, it's so hard to, you feel so still connected, right? And that's the soul tie. And that bond outside of marriage, it can deceive you. Because it's such an intimate act reserved for marriage. And it can deceive you to think you are closer to someone than you actually are. That's kind of the danger. You don't have a sound, sober mind because you are soul tied. And so the wisdom that God desires for us is to wait until marriage. To wait. You never know what, you can feel so committed. And I would say, even if you're engaged, you should wait. Like, you just never know what's going to happen. And if you've engaged in that, right, it's like the salt and the sugar all mixed up. And when you want to separate, you can't. It's like, oh, but I'm so committed. Maybe. And let me just put this out for you, okay? Like, what's the big deal if I'm super committed, I'm engaged? Look to Joseph and Mary. They were betrothed. In other words, it's like an engagement, but even more serious. And yet, they waited. I mean, otherwise, it would have not been a miracle that, the Virgin Mary had a baby Jesus. right? And so even if you're looking for an example, they too waited. Sorry. Now, the second reason, I said that's the first reason why it's a big deal. The second reason is sin affects your relationship with God. That's, in some ways, to me, even a bigger deal. While it is true that Jesus died for you, died for our sins, your salvation is secure. Okay? When you sin and make mistakes, you can't earn your salvation. And so if you've given your life to Jesus, your salvation is secure. Okay? But your salvation and your relationship standing is different. And I want to say, you don't lose your relationship either. He'll always be your father. Jesus will always be your savior. But it's the status of your relationship. When we are living in sin, it becomes difficult to hear from God. It's hard to discern his will. It's hard to feel God's affection. Walking in his will is the path to blessing, and sin disrupts that connection. Really, it's no different from any relationship, right? When you fight with somebody, like your spouse, they did something wrong, can you connect with them the same way if there was nothing? Do you hear the words? Do you follow? Can you feel their love and affection towards you? No. That's what sin does. It affects your relationship, not just with others, people, but even with God. Therefore, sexual sin is a serious matter. It's not enough to simply avoid it, but we must be shrewd and wise in our conduct. And so the Bible gives us practical wisdom for this. And this gets back, I know, I shared the first point, setting boundaries, right? In Romans 13, 14, and it instructs us, it's on the screen, to make no provision for the flesh in regard to its lust. Do not provide anything that would fuel this lust. Similarly, in Song of Solomon, there's this Shulamite woman. She's a lover of King Solomon. And this is her plea. She says, don't excite love. Don't stir it up until the time is ripe and you're ready. The wisdom is clear. This is what you're supposed to do. Don't stir something up. This is how I say it. Don't stir something up that you can't righteously satisfy. And so that wisdom is wonderful because it's different for everyone. For some people, it might be holding hands. You're holding hands. And when you hold someone's hand, you get all excited. Maybe. That's possible. Maybe it's hugging. Maybe it's kissing. Maybe it's French kissing, right? So everyone is different, but the key is you have to know what that boundary is, what that line is. What among those things is it that stirs up that passion? And if it does, that's the boundary you need to set. Even for myself, when I was dating my wife, I had these boundaries. And for me, what was that boundary? It was French kissing. For me, if I partook, it stirred something. I know it's too much information. I'm just saying, it's too much. But when I became aware of this, and so here's the difference. For my wife, it didn't do that. And so for her, it was just like, oh, it's just connecting. It's wonderful. But for me, it was something else. And so I had to set that boundary. And once that boundary was set, then I never put myself in that position where I had to make a tough decision and say, like, stop, we gotta stop right now, right? And that's just wisdom. Also, it can also be done through accountability, right? Accountability, your brothers, if you have an accountability group. When I was dating Janie, I had an accountability group. There was five of us. There's Matt, Pastor Nate, there's also Tom Choi, and Will Kim. And we were an accountability group. And so they were constantly being accountable. We met every week. So every week, they would ask me questions, right? And at one point, I think I was traveling with Janie for a wedding or to see her mother. And they were like, hey, it would be wise if we understand sometimes you have to travel together, you got to meet her mom, but can you stay in separate rooms? Right? And I was like, what? It's so expensive, right? Usually that's what they're like. And they're like, well, I just don't think it's wise. In fact, you know what we're going to do? We'll pay for your room. And of course, I'm like, oh, I don't want you to do that. So, but the spirit was right. Like, you know, if you go to a romantic place, Hawaii, you know, Thailand, Phuket, you're this beautiful place. You're sharing a room. It's just the two of you. You're going to put yourself in that position. Let's just be real. And so we got to be aware of these things. Set those boundaries. Another boundary we set, it was for another brother. And his boundary was whenever he was alone with his girlfriend, that's when, like, the temptation, the stirring up would come. And so we put in this accountability. It's like, okay, we understand you need to, and that's the thing with Hong Kong. Everyone, like, lives on their own. A lot of people live on their own without family. And so he would drop her off, and we said, okay, here is the boundary. Here's the guideline. You can drop her off. You can say your goodbye. But if you exceed, I think it was like 3 minutes of staying there, you have to pay each of us $500. No joke. And so as a result, he exceeded 3 minutes 2 times. He paid us, there's five of us, minus he paid us $4,000. After the second time, he was just like, screw it. It's not worth it. It's like, good night, I'm out, right? It was just not worth it. It worked. And so we need to set up these boundaries. The goal of these boundaries is not just to avoid sin. It's not just to make things difficult. But the point is to pursue the pleasure of God. That's the motivation. It's not you're bound by these rules. It's you want to please God, and so you want to live a holy life. And the result, I mean, and the motivation is my marriage, my wedding day. On that day, right, to be able to live purely and righteously, I can just go without a guilty conscience. And on that day, you get to receive the pleasure of God. And I just, actually, you know, my wedding day, like, oh, honestly, I find weddings so stressful. I don't remember anything. I don't remember anything. It was just a blur. But there's only one thing I remember. It was during the ceremony, as my wife walked in, during the worship, we were all just weeping. We're just weeping, and we just felt God's pleasure and presence on our wedding. That's all I remember. And so that's the goal. That's why you would pursue holiness. Okay, so number one is set up boundaries. Number two is be equally yoked. Be equally yoked. First, if you notice there, the spelling. It's Y-O-K-E, not Y-O-L-K. I know you see, you're like, come on now. So, but I used to get this mixed up. I'm serious. I was like, how does an egg, don't be like an egg. Okay, like, I'm serious. There was a moment, and so if that's you, that's fine, but that's hopefully motivation for you to go a little deeper. Like, why does it talk about being the same egg? And then you'll find out it's not talking about eggs, okay? A yoke is a wooden beam. It's a wooden beam used between two pairs of oxen cattle. It allows them to work together to pull a heavy load, oftentimes for agricultural work. And for this partnership to work well, it's very important that two animals are equal. They need to be the same size, the same height, the same strength, even the same disposition, same temperament. So what happens if they are not a good match? That means one ox, because it's bigger, and so the yoke on them will be like this, or, you know, if they're not equal yoke, that means one oxen is going to be working and producing a lot more than the other. And so what does that look like? What happens? Well, first, it's hard because one is bearing more of the burden. It can lead to injury because one is just doing way more. And also, it's just not efficient, right? Because what happens is if one is going faster, pulling harder, you're not able to control, like they're not able to go in a straight line. If this one's working harder, then it's going like this. And so as a result, these cattle that are unequally yoked will just traverse in a circle, like maybe a big circle, right? So this is the agricultural image, but it is the basis and crucial for this spiritual principle of being equally yoked. In 2 Corinthians 6:14, Apostle Paul writes, "Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness, or what fellowship has light with darkness?" Paul is guiding us to be equally yoked in our relationships. When you marry someone, what happens? You become one. And so yes, what's going to happen is you're going to influence one another. It's inevitable. And this influence happens even, not just when you're married, but even when you're dating. I would argue that it's not simply enough, as we're talking about equally yoked, it's not enough even for someone just to identify as a Christian. What you're really after, and the more important question is, are they actively following Jesus? The problem arises when one person wants to follow God and the other person doesn't. And it can lead to a mismatch, and I just thought of three different possible outcomes. One, you are hindered in your walk with God. Like the mismatched cattle, your spiritual life becomes inefficient. You struggle to move forward. And like that unequally yoked cattle, you're just going in circles. Or instead of going the direct path, you're swerving all the time. Or two, you compromise your faith. To keep the peace or please your partner, you compromise. You may sin and you even try to justify it. Or number three, you become discouraged. You go to your partner, you share with them your revelation, your spiritual breakthrough, something that God said, and their response is indifference. Or even doubt. Like, are you sure? Did God really say that? And so it's important, right? This is most likely what you'll experience. And then you have to ask yourself, then what's the point? Isn't marriage meant to glorify God? It's a reflection of how Jesus loved the church. And so you have to ask yourself this question when you're dating. Are you on the same page spiritually? Are you equally yoked? Okay, so number three. This is the most important point. And I would say this point affects the first and second point, but it's also the most challenging point, if you didn't already find them challenging. The third point is, you need to love God more. Is this on the screen? Third point, you have to love God more than the person you are dating. More than the person you're dating. Mark 12:30, Bible's clear. It says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength." This means that the love we have for God needs to be the most important in our lives. It needs to be greater. The love needs to be greater than for anyone. It needs to be greater than anything. I would say it has to be even greater than our love for ourselves. And so this is not limited to just dating, right? So I think this is where this point can speak to all of us. But it's still a dating message, so my point is going to be more for dating, right? And so the problem begins when we put someone or something ahead of God. That's when we fall into trouble. And you might never admit this out loud, right? Because we're way too sophisticated. We're aware of the Ten Commandments. Like, I'm never going to say, like, I love this more than God. We're smart enough, we're sophisticated enough that we would never say that. However, here's the symptom that reflects that. The symptom is when you ever think or feel or say this, which is, if only I had this one thing, then I would be satisfied. If only I got that promotion, if only I got that job, if only I was married, if only I had whatever. If you ever think that, that's how you know you're putting something else above God. Because what you're really saying is, this thing, whatever is my only thing, that thing, you're saying that's the thing that's going to satisfy us. God is actually insufficient in satisfying me. And this is especially true when you're dating. When you're dating, you know, if you look to another person as your ultimate hope and satisfaction, like, oh, if only we would be together, if only I married them, then I'll be satisfied and happy. You're going to be disappointed. Because it can lead to a few things. One is if you're very demanding towards, if you're kind of more of a demanding personality, then you're going to have unrealistic expectations towards somebody else. If you think they're going to satisfy you and they don't, one, you're going to be disappointed, you're going to be angry, but then what else is going to happen? You're going to demand more for them. Why aren't you more like this? How could you do that? Why don't you understand me? And so it just becomes very tense. And at the end of the day, it's really unfair to impose like that level of expectation on somebody who it's impossible for them to satisfy. Again, only God. Or if you are more the accommodating type, right? If you're more accommodating, you will constantly seek the other person's approval. You're living for that other person. You're constantly thinking, how can I please them? What can I say to make them happy? Your sense of worth becomes tied to an imperfect person. You desire their approval. So if they're imperfect and you want their approval, then that's just shaky ground. The truth is, only God can truly satisfy you. He alone has the ability to satisfy the deepest desires of your heart. And so let's look to Genesis 2:24. This is the creation story. In the beginning. And it says, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. All to say, marriage, this is God's plan. This is his work. So if this is his thing, it's not man's plan. If this is God's plan, don't you think it would be wise to rely on him for this plan? And so if you're starting your dating journey, which is to lead to marriage, don't you think it'd be wise to keep God involved? Not just involved, but ask him for his help. To start a journey that is God designed without him, I mean, that would just be foolish. So, let me just be very clear. I know you're like, oh, that, and just say this. You know, putting things before God, loving, you know, in your relationship, you end up loving someone more than God, it's normal. Right? It's actually normal to not do these things would actually be abnormal. But, the problem is, like, this is just our human tendency. But the important question is, are you aware of it? And I want to say to you, this is maybe a quality of a mature Christian. A mature Christian is somebody who is able to identify and they're aware of their weakness. These areas where they have put God first. And we see this in the Apostle Paul. Why? As he matures and grows, he's more and more of his weakness and sinfulness. That's actually a quality, because if you're aware, then you have the opportunity to respond. And so, how will you respond? You can double down. You can try even harder in your relationship. You become more self-reliant, more demanding, more critical of the person you're dating. Or you might even be tempted to give up on a good relationship or hold on to a bad relationship. Or you can choose to put your hope in God and not the person you are dating. So I want to invite the worship team up. Oh, nice. And I'm not proud to say, but when it comes to things of God, I don't know why, I always have to experience the mistake before I know it's true. I'm just like so stubborn like that. And so one example is shortly after I became a Christian, loved Jesus, wanted to follow him with all my heart, mind, and soul, I started to date my first Christian girlfriend. And at that time, we started dating, and before we made it official, I mean, we shared how we felt. We decided to pray together. So good, right? Pray together. Ask for God's blessing. Ask for his will. Does this please you? Is this your will? And so we prayed. And then that small, still voice spoke into our hearts. And God said, no, don't do it. And so what did we do? We did it. By did, I mean we started dating, okay? We disobeyed. Thought, maybe I heard wrong. Maybe it's not a big deal. And it even felt kind of romantic, like, oh yeah, for you, I would disobey God. Hope you never ever feel, actually, that's messed up, by the way. By the time it kind of felt romantic. And so, basically what happened, like, you know, I liked her. Why did I give in? I liked her. The emotions, yeah, they're significant. It's very easy to put that person ahead of God, and that's exactly what I did. The result, I mean, it's not Janie's. We broke up, right? We broke up and experienced such heartache. I was like so messed up. I felt like someone punched me in the stomach. I was suffering. And then after that experience, and this is where like, then I was like, God, you're the only one who can satisfy me. Right after experiencing this, I can't experience it in another person. Only you are the one that I can rely on. The only you that will fully satisfy me. And so I made, what do you say, a covenant, an agreement. And I said, God, you know, for the next year, I'm not going to think about girls at all. So basically, it's like, I'm not even going to do any relationship. I mean, friendship's fine, but it's like, I just want to fix my eyes on you. And so I did that. I like Of course, there was interest, but I would like rebuke it, right? Like, get behind me. I'm committed to God. And so what happened? I mean, eventually I ended up meeting Janie. But what I learned from my experience, it's not that like, oh, now everything works out. The point is, where do I get my value from? And time again in my relationship with Janie, I actually had to wrestle with this. Basically, when I felt like things were difficult, when things were compromising, when I, you know, whatever, or like I wasn't sure how she would react to me being in ministry, I had to go to the Lord time and time again. And basically, God, is it Janie, the one that satisfied me, or is it you? And I even wrestled with the idea, what if we break up? What if I were a loser? Would I be okay? And the answer, through that wrestling, it wasn't easy. It was yes. God, you're all I need. And so if I break up for her, I believe you have something better in store for me. And I believe you have something better in store for her. And it's happened time and time again. And maybe the answer, like, okay, then what? That's why things worked out. That's why the result is you got married. That's not the point. The point is not the result. And in fact, I would say to you, I've had to do this over, not just with my marriage, even in my marriage, right? But even with my children, my job, ministry, friends, where I have to be, God, what brings that satisfaction? Is it these things or you? And if it is God who brings you that satisfaction. And I want to tell you, when you come to this revelation, it's actually liberating. Because the world's pressures, the pressure to make things work, it's not on your shoulders anymore. Because you get your satisfaction from God. And so then you just serve, you just love. And the result isn't things that are work out. The result is you get God, right? If you come to that place where you recognize, God, you're all I need. You're the one who satisfies me. You love me so much. I am your child. Then the results don't matter. And so I wanted to open the altar up today. I want to invite the pastors to come up. And they're here to pray for you. And I wanted to open this opportunity for us to, if you recognize there's areas in your life, and so this is not just limited to just those dating. Maybe for dating, maybe you recognize, oh, I've come to love this person more than you. For others, maybe it could be your job, it could be your children, it could be your family. There's just certain areas you recognize, I put my value and satisfaction in these things. And not in God. Where's the pastors? Okay. I have an altar call for the pastors first. And so I want to provide that opportunity for you to recognize where your satisfaction and strength, your source comes from. Comes from God. Comes from God. And the pastors are going to come here to just pray with you. You can pray for breakthrough. Recognize that breakthrough doesn't come from your own strength. It comes from God. And so let me finish with this verse. And it's really Jesus' invitation to us in Matthew 11, 28 to 30. And after this invitation, just come on up. Matthew 11, 28 to 30. Jesus says, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Amen. So come on up if that's you.